Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Redondo Beach, More to See, on May 25th, 2016. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show, Redondo Beach, More to See, is brought to you by the Redondo Beach Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. For over 108 years, the Redondo Beach Chamber has played a vital role in helping companies grow their business by taking the lead in programs and efforts that help create a strong local economy and make the community a great place to do business. The Chamber is committed to promoting the community through its aggressive tourism program and by participating in efforts that improve the quality of life in Redondo Beach. In addition, the Chamber represents the interests of business by working year-round to ensure local elected officials and other decision-makers are educated on the impact their actions have on the local economy. Networking programs provide opportunities for members to sell their products and services to peers and make lifelong connections. The Redondo Chamber is also the proud sponsor of signature events in Redondo Beach, such as the Redondo Beach Lobster Festival and Super Bowl Sunday 10K. For additional information on how the Redondo Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Redondo Beach, visit the website at visitredondo.com.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our mini adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling a little better today, Joe. Thanks. How are you?
Very, very good. A little jealous.
A little jealous, huh?
The Who.
The Who, yeah. We're going to see The Who tonight at Staples.
Oh, man.
I'm very excited.
What an iconic rock and roll band.
But last time I saw them was Quadrophenia.
Yes, I went to that concert in Chicago.
Yeah, how long ago was that? I don't even want to know.
Yeah, right. That was a while ago, yeah. So
I posted something on Facebook about it the other day, and somebody went, Who? I was like, don't be smartass. Yeah. Kids.
Fantastic, fantastic. And, of course, lots of stuff happening around. And, Jackie, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show. Microsoft has announced that the free upgrade to Windows 10 will be ending July 29th.
Yes, yes, yes. If you haven't gotten it yet, you got to get it.
Right, right.
And it's very good. You know, we've both had it for a while now, right? I've had it for, what, 4 or 5, more than that, 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's good. It's, you know, it's just a little adjustment. You just have to, you know, get used to a couple of newfangled things, and it's very good.
Well, I mean, it's really, it's required that if you have Vista or, you know, God forbid, you should have Windows 95 or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's time. It is the one core. Microsoft has a new arrangement of their operating system, one Windows for every device,
mm-hmm.
From phones to Internet of Things, you know, refrigerators and cars and servers and mainframes and all. So it is really the future, and we have to give it to Microsoft. They finally got it done.
Yeah, well, you got to get it before July or before August, then end of July.
End of July, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of things that are happening now, and I'm thrilled about this topic, Jackie. This is a fantastic topic to talk about because it really affects many businesses and even some professionals. And
it affects everybody.
I guess it affects everyone.
It will affect everybody, yes.
And it's gonna change a lot of people's lives. We're going to talk about that as well. But, Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Weston Labar, founding partner of the California-based consulting firm Pear Strategies. Pair Strategies offers a variety of services, including public relations, government affairs, community outreach, and trade association management. Weston is very active in the California political scene, representing trade associations and chambers from around the state. He also serves on a variety of federal and state advisory boards in a wide range of issues, including economic development, international trade, and supply chain optimization. So anyway, Joe, this morning we're going to be speaking about a very hot-button topic, minimum wage, and how do changes in the minimum wage affect you. Welcome to the program, Weston. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay. This is one of those topics. It's like Planned Parenthood. It's one of the topics that that the national political debate has taken up with the elections and the candidacy of the Democrats and the Republicans both. But Weston, give us a framing for this topic as it relates to California. California already has the highest minimum wage in the country, doesn't it?
Well, it depends how you look at it. First of all, I want to say it's a very complex issue, and there's very differing schools of thought when it comes to minimum wage and how it impacts the communities in which you see different types of minimum wage. The federal minimum wage, which we've had since 1938, has been at $7.25 an hour for the last handful of years, and California recently exceeded that, passing a $10 an hour minimum wage just a couple of years ago. What we started to see around the state, we've seen this in other states, you know, San Francisco has always had a higher minimum wage than the state minimum wage, and in fact had the highest minimum wage in the country until Seattle, Washington went to a $15 hour minimum wage several years ago. And what we started to see around the state was a piecemealing of minimum wage policy at the local level. Now, some would argue that that's good, and some would argue that that's bad. Some will say that local economies are very difficult to put against each other. So $15 an hour for somebody in downtown Los Angeles is very different from $15 an hour in Imperial County or Barstow.
Right.
And so there's the argument made on the $15 an hour local front, or any change in the local front, that it creates that it's actually right size for that local community. However, from the business standpoint, many local chambers of commerce were against the piecemealing of it because it can create a disparity in economic competitiveness between one chamber and another chamber in the context of the cities in which they operate. So if Redondo Beach, for instance, was at $15 an hour, but Hermosa Beach and Manhattan Beach were at $10 an hour, where are you going to locate your business? Well, all other things being equal, you're probably going to locate your business in one of the places with a lower minimum wage. And then you also talk about, for those communities that do have the lower minimum wage and they're adjacent to a higher minimum wage community, does that mean that you are not going to be able to compete for the same skill level of a workforce because you're not going to be able to recruit the cream of the crop?
Mm-hmm.
So this debate has been going on throughout the state of California for the last several years. It's been at the very top of the priority list for organized labor. SEIU specifically has been the big proponent of the $15 hour minimum wage on a national level. And we've seen some traction, I would say, at the White House that there needs to be an increase in the minimum wage. I know that President Obama had talked about a $10 an hour minimum wage at the federal level.
Right.
But really, at the end of the day, what happened was there was two competing ballot measures put on the ballot after, like I said, a wide array of cities, including Los Angeles, Long Beach, here locally, went to a higher minimum wage. It was $13 an hour in Long Beach, $15 an hour in Santa Monica and L.A. We saw these ballot measures come for the November ballot. The legislature and the governor felt that there were some holes in them that we needed to protect the state of California economy from, struck a deal, and in about 6 days were able to somehow pass a comprehensive minimum wage law that scales it, but it does increase it to $15 an hour by 2022 or 2023, depending on the size of your business.
And this is statewide?
Correct. It's statewide. Now, it doesn't prohibit a local jurisdiction from increasing their minimum wage more if they want to. So, you know, if Los Angeles wanted to, they could increase it to $18 or $20 an hour. We probably don't think that's appropriate at this point in time, given that we just had a giant increase from, let's say, 10 to 15 over the next several years. But, this is statewide. And quite frankly, I think it's what a lot of larger cities were hoping would happen, because it took the burden off of them as decision makers to increase the minimum wage themselves.
Nothing like getting the burden taken off of you as a decision maker, even if you've been elected and are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to make decisions.
Well, welcome to
the land of
California.
Nothing like it.
This to me, why is it when it comes to government, everything has to be so difficult and confusing? This is as bad as how we choose delegates or how delegates choose their person.
I'm sorry, Jackie, you're starting to sound like Bernie Sanders Trump.
This is insane. I mean, you're talking federal, you're talking state. I had no idea that local cities could do their own thing on their level. So what the city of Redondo Beach can say, our minimum wage is going to be this, and then the state is going to say, our minimum wage is going to be this, and then the feds are going to say, our minimum wage is going to be this.
Yeah.
How ridiculously confusing.
Arbitrary.
Well, think about it this way. I think one of the other things, let me talk about one of the pros statewide.
Weston, before you go forward, I just want to lay some groundwork so people have some numbers in front of them while they're listening to the discussion. Most people, there's a standard graphic that's floating around through this debate from the Economic Policy Institute. I don't know if you've seen this graphic. This is about what people think the minimum wage affects and the reality. So people think the minimum wage affects teenagers, people that work part-time after school, live with parents, or they're earning extra spending money. But the minimum wage, the reality, is that the average age of the person affected will be 36 years old. 89% are not teens. They're 20 or older. 37% are 40 or older. 56% are women. The majority of people affected by the minimum wage are women. 28% have children. 57% work full time at the minimum wage. They do not have another better job. And on average, they earn more than half. And this is the key. On average, they earn more than half of their family's total income. Now, Weston, the impact of this is quite different than what most people think, right?
And I'm very familiar with that study. In fact, I had a discussion. I was lucky enough to have an audience with Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom yesterday where we talked about this study in depth. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of people aren't aware of those numbers. And I think it's as much of a comment on where we are with career technical training in this state, where we are with workforce development, and where we are with just the middle-class jobs that once were the bread and butter of the California economy. The fact that now we are – and Los Angeles, by and large, is a great microcosm of looking at this. We have a lot of low-skilled, low-wage jobs and a very high cost of living. And that's one of the things that the minimum wage in itself does not address, is the high cost of living in some of these areas. And when you take in context all the other things, you talk about affordable housing, you talk about health insurance, you talk about retirement programs, it becomes a really big ball of yarn that's really tough to unwind. One of the things that I know the chamber has discussed in its meetings with legislators on this issue is, should we look at workers' comp reform as some way to allow businesses to be able to be financially stable? You lower the rates on workers' comp. That allows them to reassociate or reallocate that money into wages, and it becomes less of a financial burden for local business. Mm-hmm. We've reached kind of that impasse, and those numbers are very important, but we've reached that impasse where Now we're looking at maybe the fourth leg of the industrial movement, which means automation. And so there's a very fine line. We're at a hinge moment in this time in history, and we're at a very tough time where if we outprice labor based on what is available with technology, we could actually start losing jobs. And it's really a delicate situation, and I think by and large it depends on the types of jobs, and it depends on where you are located based on cost of living and other things, because not everybody is going to be as fungible in the ability to adjust from a consumer pricing standpoint. So I think this debate will continue to go on for the next several years, but I think a large part of it is helping figure out how to reduce some of the cost on business so the impact on the wage side is not as draconian on them. And at the same time, looking at other ways that we can make better jobs for folks, such as career technical training, which I know the chamber is a huge advocate for, and figuring out how are we going to get a better workforce and a workforce for that fourth leg of the industrial movement.
I have a very good friend, Weston, who is in the insurance business, and he tells me that the workman's comp, you know, sort of universe is so outdated in terms of how it works. I mean, there are people out there, small business people out there with workman's comp, established workman's comp policies that have not been touched or reviewed for 15 years. Now, it's a crime from his point of view, because if he goes in there and reviews their workman's comp policies, he can save them thousands of dollars a year and get them sometimes better coverage. And it's just like shooting fish in a barrel. It's just a matter of how many people he can visit a day to get, you know, people to review their workman's comp. But this should be done from the state or certainly the local level to encourage them to get better coverage at lower cost, and therefore allow them to have that money to pay their employees better. It's something that needs to be taken up by government. Is this on the horizon? You make it sound like it's possible.
I can say the discussion's happening, as it was pointed out earlier by Jackie. Nothing's that easy when you're talking about government and public policy. So I know that the discussion's happening. I know that the discussion has been happening since we started talking about minimum wage to the $15 an hour level about 2 years ago.
Right.
Many state legislators, specifically in disadvantaged communities, they're very concerned with how this is going to impact their local economy, the people in their community, the jobs in their community. And workers' comp is a real option on how to offset some of the impacts of minimum wage to small business, because I think minimum wage disproportionately affects small business more than it does big business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the small business that is that maybe has summertime employees. You know, maybe they have maybe the retail, restaurant, food, tourism. You know, all things that you tend to see small business very involved in, and they don't have the same flexibility to respond in the way that a large business does. Or a corporation does that's already paying people well beyond the minimum wage.
Right.
So workers' comp, it's a real option. It's something that I encourage legislators to look at workers' comp reform. But, you know, the insurance industry as a whole needs a little bit of a retooling. I mean, just think about your car insurance, right? If you go out, you get the cheapest car insurance you can, and then every year that you keep that same car insurance, your rates go up, even though nothing happened with you. And then 5 years down the road, you switch companies and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's one of the only insurances that rewards, or it's one of the only products that rewards people for leaving and going to somebody else,
right,
as opposed to staying put and being a good customer. And so, insurance in general is something that should be looked at, but the state can look at the way the rates are calculated and can also just, they can take a look at how it impacts different industries.
Okay, real quick here. So what you guys have been focusing on small businesses, but isn't it true, I remember reading when this $15 an hour thing first came up first happened, that didn't one of the big companies, I don't know if it was Walmart or Target or somebody like that, immediately cut the hours of their workforce down to like 30 hours a week or something like that? Once, do you guys remember that? You know about that?
I'm going to let Weston talk.
I know Walmart nationally is going through a reconfiguration. They tried a lot of different pilot programs with the Walmart Fresh and different things that didn't pan out for them, and they closed a lot of stores. And I don't think that was directly minimum wage focused. But what I do know is McDonald's is opening the very first completely automated McDonald's.
Wow.
There will be no one working there. And so what I think you're seeing, the larger companies that where they can, you're going to see more of the fresh and easy model at grocery stores, where there may be one or two people there to help you out, probably with an IT degree, but they probably will move to more self-checkout kiosks. You will see more of the, I have a very good friend that owns several chain fast food restaurants, and at the national level, the franchisees are talking about automation and talking about moving to kiosks, and since it's something that McDonald's already done, you know, they were able to take it to the next level already with the resources they have. So big business has the resources to be able to look at, do I invest in technology or do I invest in people? Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things, you know, the Los Angeles County Federation of Business, who I sit on their board, did a poll. And one of the things that they asked people was what they would be investing in moving forward. And more people said that they would have more investments in technology than in people moving forward. And the biggest reason is because technology, once you invest in it, if it's sound technology, it's going to be there. People, there's a lot of different variables that go into the human in general, right? So you don't know how long they're going to stay with you, how good they're going to be, what life crises may come up.
Those messy people, messy
those people, they get sick, they have babies,
yeah.
They go on vacation, yeah.
I know. What kind of world are we living in? but these are the real questions that are happening today that 10 years ago would not have been happening. And so now that there's technology available, the companies that have the resources are saying, do I put millions and billions of dollars into something that I know is going to be there for the next 20 years that I'm never going to have to sink significant money in again, other than just maintenance and upkeep, or am I going to put money into constant training for something that most people can do with just a simple training program? And so that's where we have to have a completely different discussion, just based on employment in general. What are the jobs of the future? What are realistic goals, and what are we training people for? Because a college degree used to be the gateway to a good middle class or upper class job, and that's no longer the case. A college degree is probably less valuable than a high school degree was in 1950, and so and people are coming out with unprecedented financial burdens in the form of student debt. So we're dealing with a whole lot of different issues at one time, and these are very complex subjects. And I think one of the things that we try to simplify things and look at them in the short term as opposed to the long term, and we're not taking an over-encompassing look, the global look, if you will, at how all these things play off each other. You know, workman's comp should not be its own discussion, and minimum wage should not be its own discussion. How can we talk about those things together? But unfortunately, those are not the discussions that are happening at really many levels of government. So until we start to get to the point where we rethink how we're doing things, what are we training people for? How are we educating people? How are businesses being affected by regulations and fees? We're going to continue to run around in a circle.
This is an amazing topic, Weston, and you bring a wealth of knowledge to this topic and to this discussion. We are in an unprecedented time in the history of technology. Steve Case, the founder of AOL, just released a new book called The Third Wave, and he's paying an homage to a book by Alvin Toffler, published in the 70s, also called The Third Wave. And in Alvin Toffler's book, he was talking about the rise of information technology. And this would be, you know, the personal computer and all of these things, the first wave, essentially. But Steve Case is talking about how now we're going to use technology to make things more efficient. The idea of an automated McDonald's just sends chills down my spine. I want somebody looking at my food, even if they're being paid the minimum wage.
Yeah, I guess that goes way back to the thoughts of robots taking over society, you know, in the 50s and 60s when we thought about the Jetson era. But yeah, you know, it's an ongoing debate between financial bottom line, right, and what's best for communities. I think that's the other thing we have to take into consideration. You know, I've always heard that in order for businesses to do good in the community, they need to do well with their bottom line. But the same needs to be said for communities. In order for businesses to thrive, communities need to do well. And so it's part of that ongoing debate between social responsibility and free market capitalism. And obviously, this has probably been the underlying hot topic for much of the presidential debate and a lot of things that we hear just on basic philosophy in California politics. There's a fine line between the two, and in Los Angeles in general, the wage disparity it has grown. And so, you know, the minimum wage, I can make arguments for and against it. I'm not going to get into what my personal feelings are, but at the end of the day, there's two very different school of thoughts on it. Like I said, I think that if you looked at it differently, we could be having a much different discussion on this, where it's not part of the main conversation, right? It's just another piece of something with an overall reform that could really help both the business community and the people that live in the communities these businesses are in.
You know, one thing that we're not mentioning, which to me has always been one of the most important aspects of anybody I do business with, whether it's a big company or, you know, a tiny company or somebody I deal with on a day-to-day basis, my dry cleaner or whatever, customer service, you know, and how frustrated people still are when they can't get a human being on the phone and they're dealing with one of those automated systems. Customer service, as far as I'm concerned, will always be king. And in order to have good customer service, you have to have human beings, right? Yeah. I mean, you can't push this aside. This is important. You know, and those companies that have the best customer service are the ones that do well. I mean, is anybody thinking of that? I mean, when you go to that automated McDonald's and it messes up your order, you know, who are you going to scream at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons that McDonald's is only going to have one of those to start out with, because they want to see what the effects of it is. It's kind of unprecedented, right? And so if everybody shows up and orders a Big Mac and they get a double quarter pounder, you know, how are they going to be able to deal with that? So,
right. I think both
the big businesses and small businesses are looking at a lot of different avenues here, but the point is that they are looking at it. And if you look at many industries, they're going to be looking at it. You look at automated cars, you know, Tesla, Google, Audi, they're all coming out with automated cars, driverless cars. You're looking at truck platooning. So you don't necessarily need six truck drivers to drive six trucks. Maybe you need one truck driver to drive six trucks. And that industry, transportation, is actually is a huge industry that we're looking at, because 55% of the people in the transportation industry are getting to an age of being close to retirement. I can tell you that I work heavily in the port trucking industry,
right,
and the majority of those folks are 50 years or older.
Wow.
And so as companies are looking at the cost of doing business, they're looking at new technology, this is where some of the bigger companies may say, maybe I'm going to look at a driverless truck and see how that is, because
right,
we're not getting as many folks into the industry as possible. And maybe for, you know, the company owner, it's a viable option. Obviously, there's a lot that needs to be figured out, but taxi companies, et cetera, the transportation industry is aging. And as things get more expensive, they're going to look at technology.
One thing I will say, Weston, from the technology side, the conversation behind the scenes on driverless vehicles, driverless cars is, of course, what most people have seen in the news. A driverless truck is 100 times easier because trucks have a much more constricted path than they can take. So they can't drive on every street. So the streets that they can drive on are much, you know, broader, bigger, less likely to be obstructed due to construction and so forth, because they're major thoroughfares. And therefore, it's going to be easier to navigate. And then trucks don't have to do a lot of turns. They're not picking up passengers. They're just going from point A to point B. It's going to happen in the next decade. We're going to see a lot of automated trucks.
I don't know how I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I know.
Driving on the 405 and coming up alongside a semi with nobody in the driver's seat. I don't know about that.
Well, one company thinks in the next 5 years that they will have a operatable automated truck for long haul that's ready to go. And I don't know, you know, there's obviously a lot of different hurdles they're going to have to pass from a regulatory standpoint, but but one company feels like the technology is that close.
Right.
And like I said, the other thing that has been tested in Europe that has worked is the platooning of trucks, where you have one driver and the trucks are basically all in a line. And the guy in the front drives and the other one's computer systems just hook right up to it and follow it to the destination. So that's kind of a hybrid, right? Before we got to the electric car, we had the hybrid. Before we get to the automated truck, we'll have the hybrid of platooning maybe.
Right.
But these are real conversations that are not that far off in the distance.
Right. That is amazing. That is a great concept. Basically cyborg. A human automation melding, that's obviously a beautiful thing. And one thing, Weston, I think we should discuss with the tragedy over the Mediterranean with Egypt Air flight going down into the Mediterranean. One of the things that I've heard many aviation experts talk about is the streaming of the data recorder information, the idea that we have to go to the bottom of some ocean to find some device to get information is ludicrous in this day and age, when that box should have been streaming every second of audio and
the camera and in the cockpit
parameters.
Yeah,
all of that
yeah.
should have been streamed to yeah. some satellite up until the very last microsecond. That it was
the airplane's already closest to the cloud, right? So
right.
You would think it'd be easier to update it.
Well, it's going to come because there's an outcry among the avionics community about planes not having this capability, when people are already on Wi-Fi, and we're not doing the right thing and sending this data somewhere where it can be instantly analyzed.
Joe, we need to do our commercial break. We're running late.
Yes, we are. We're running late, ladies and gentlemen. That's because we're having a fantastic discussion, and we're talking about something that will affect you and your life, whether you're one of these 56% of the people being affected are women, 57% work full-time at a minimum wage job. So if you're one of these people, or if you're a business owner, or if you're just a consumer, you will be affected by this. And so it's a very timely discussion. And also, we'd love to have your comments or questions. If you'd like to give us a call, please call us at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We have Weston Labar with us, founding partner of the California-based consulting firm Pair Strategies, and we would love to have your comment or question. We would also like to thank a sponsor. So with your indulgence.
This segment of the South Bay Show is brought to you by Your Actualized Visions. A local advertising agency, Your Actualized Visions offers all your advertising needs under one roof. From logo design, business cards, banners, and signage, to online services such as website design, SEO management, promotional videos, reputation management, and loyalty promotions, you name it, and your Actualized Visions will handle it for you on time and under budget. Built on the needs of their clients, your Actualized Visions is competitively priced and economical, saving you money and greatly enhancing your bottom line. At Your Actualized Visions, customer service is all local with one point of contact. No more dealing with robo-answering machines, getting the runaround, or speaking to someone in another country. Your Actualized Visions understands your hyper-local advertising needs and focuses on bringing you real clients. They do not buy likes, followers, or fake results. Your campaigns are real, built with real community followers who want to purchase your services and products. The only thing standing in the way of your company's success is you now picking up the phone right now and calling Your Actualized Visions at 310-413-8773. To learn more about what Your Actualized Visions can do for you and your company, visit the website at youractualizedvisions.com. Your Actualized Visions, your dreams today, not someday.
So, Weston, we've talked about quite a bit of the hot button items. Is there something that you believe that we've left off the table that should be discussed right up front?
Yeah, I'd like to talk just a little bit about the specifics of the implementation of the new minimum wage law and how businesses should gear up to dealing with that at this point in time.
Sure.
So as I said, starting this year, starting January 1, 2016, the minimum wage went up to $10 an hour statewide. And for businesses that are 26 employees or more, so they consider that the bigger business, starting January 1, 2017, so starting next year, the increases start. And it starts at $10.50 an hour. The following year, it goes to $11 an hour, and it increases $1 an hour per year until you get to 2022. And in 2022, it goes to $15 an hour. But the interesting part about the minimum wage is that it doesn't necessarily stop there. It's adjusted to the U.S. Consumer Price Index, or the CPI. And so that allows for, if there's inflation, it allows for the minimum wage to go up, which is kind of a unique concept in the fact that from the federal standpoint and historically, it's always been a fixed minimum wage. And some proponents of the increase in the minimum wage will say that we would already be here if we would have had a provision like this when minimum wage was conceived back in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the minimum wage theoretically could go up to, you know, $20 an hour by 2030 or $50 an hour by 2070 or who knows. It depends on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other interesting things is it cannot be reduced. The minimum wage cannot be reduced based on the CPI. So that's, I think, one thing that people should be aware of for small businesses. So for 25 employees or less, there's basically a one-year implementation grace period. So instead of taking effect in 2017, it goes up to $10.50 in 2018, and then it goes up to $11 in 2019 until it gets to $15 an hour in 2023. So that's the overall basic implementation. What was in the original ballot measure would have made that completely concrete, a guarantee to happen with the compromise in the governor's legislation. If we have an extreme economic downturn, if there's a lot of job loss, if there's an issue with the state budget, the governor can suspend that, which is what a lot of people feel was the impetus or the reasoning behind striking that deal. It gives the governor the ability to stop the increases if it is having a negative effect on the economy. The other thing that the bill does is it creates paid sick leave laws. This is the other part of the minimum wage law that many people forget about. But in this state, we also have a lot of regulatory laws from the state legislature based on paid sick leave, based on overtime, based on a lot of different aspects of compensation. And so this also adds one paid sick day for workers, I believe, for every essentially 2 months that they work. And so they're adding the amount of sick days that folks can get as well. And that also changes based on the number of employees you have. It's a much more complex calculation, but that's the other aspect of this bill that people seem to forget about. But it also is taking a look at paid sick leave for workers. And this past year, there was another piece of legislation that passed that expanded what the definition of family is for taking off using paid sick leave for family care. So there's a lot of, like I said, when it comes to this legislation, it's not like it's going up to $15 an hour and that's the legislation. There's a lot of different nuances and there's a lot of different pieces of legislation that play off of it that, you know, depending on who you talk to, they may think are more onerous or less or more impactful than the minimum wage law itself.
Hmm. There are so many things that you mentioned. I mean, one thing, I like the idea that at least the governor can step in and suspend the increase if necessary, but that's on an annual basis. That's, you know, hardly what I would call a reaction. It's not proactive, it's reactive. And then in the sense that, you know, when we talk about inflation, I guess people don't remember, you know, we used to have inflation in the 70s of like 17-18%. Right now it's almost negative. So it doesn't impact anything right now, but if it were 17%, people would be making, like you say, $40-$50 an hour for minimum wage. That would be devastating.
Yeah, those I think are the things that have been more concerning. Over the years there's been a lot of bills that have been put forward in the state legislature to increase minimum wage. And one of the things that, although there's been concern and much of the bill, I think the biggest concern from the business perspective is that fact that it is attached to the CPI, it is attached to inflation in the state of California or really nationally, right? Which, how do you have a statewide policy that's attached to a federal number? So we're looking at a lot of different aspects, but that part has been the bigger fight from the chambers of the world, from the business organizations. If you're going to pass an increase in the minimum wage, that discussion, I think, is a more palatable discussion as opposed to this attachment to the CPI. And depending, as you said, depending on how the economy is going, you could really have some issues down the road. And if you take a downturn in the economy, the impact could be catastrophic. And
right.
That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Obviously, we've got several years before that goes into effect. We've got until 2023, really, until that starts to be the case. I think that's going to be a discussion down the road. We need to make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for failure. You know, you could almost equate it to when the boom days in the early 2000s, when we started seeing the massive increases in pensions for retirees, specifically on the public sector side, and all of a sudden downturn in the economy, downturn in taxes, and the next thing you know, you've got cities looking at filing bankruptcy. It was a well-intentioned way to reward employees for hard work, but it had many unintended consequences. And usually that's where the devil is, right? It's in the details and it's in the unintended consequences that comes from this legislation. And so
cities are going to be dealing with that for decades to come still.
Exactly. Even the cities that have been able to respond to that in the short term have large unfunded pension liabilities coming up. And I talked about the I'll call it the labor cliff that's coming up. There's a lot of people in California set to retire in the next 10 years. And California is becoming an increasingly older state. You know, why is that? Well, it becomes the people that have lived here for a long time. It's more affordable because of things like Prop 13. Their housing costs aren't as high. Young people can't afford to live here as much. College debt is very high, so it's very difficult for them to pay a rent with some of the jobs that are out there and student loans. And so there's a lot of things, but California is not getting any younger. And the only way that you can take care of older people is to be able to pay into a system with younger people coming in. And so there's a lot of issues that we're looking at moving forward. And so It's the unintended consequences that we really have to pay attention to.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit of the airline industry. A couple of weeks ago, I was reading about the immense profits they're making now because gas dropped so much.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not passing those savings on to the passengers.
Right. Right.
You know, they're not taking away those baggage fees. They're not giving us the cheaper, you know. I mean, I know that they struggled for many, many, many years, but with the gas prices dropping the way they did, you know, they're making unbelievable profits right now, but the consumer is not seeing that.
Also, you know, the supposed profits that they're making now are really on a future balance sheet, because they would have already contracted for, you know, who knows, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of gallons of fuel in the future. They've hedged their bets. Now those hedges are going to turn out to be windfalls, but not cash in their pocket today, but eventually. And so their prices, if they're public companies, and most of them are, their prices are going up. Wall Street loves airlines right now. Yeah. You know, I think we have Bobby Christian with us. Bobby, are you with us?
I sure am.
All right. We have Bobby Christian from the Redondo Beach Chamber and Visitors Bureau with us. And we're talking about minimum wage, Bobby. I know that affects a lot of people who are mm-hmm. chamber members, whether they're just consumers or certainly if they're business owners. This is a big topic, and we're excited to be talking about this.
Mhm. Mhm. It's changing the landscape of so many things. I just heard yesterday that McDonald's has announced that they're going to roll out self-checkout in most of their stores.
Yes. Yes. It's very exciting. They're going to start with the self-checkout. You know, very similar to the Walmart or other models you'll see in big box stores. And then eventually, Weston was mentioning the idea of automated food preparation. We'll see if we get there. But Bobby,
I just
Christian,
want to know what day do I get to put my hand right in the fries and just eat all the fries I want? Like when McDonald's is like, they set up all you can eat fries, I'm on board. That's all I got to say. But until that day, we've got so much stuff going on in Redondo, I don't even have time to eat fries. That's a lot.
What's going on, Bobby?
Well, let's start with the chamber side of things. Tonight, of course, is the mixer that we were talking about last week. It is at the chamber office on the chamber patio. It's sponsored by Sanger Insurance. That's going to be this evening. It's going to be preceded by a new member orientation, and then the mixer will be kicking off at 5:30 p.m. It's $5 for members, $20 for non-members. If you want to get on the list for the event, you can contact us at the chamber. And then next week, we have a ribbon cutting at Valentino's Pizza and Pasta, which if you've ever been to a ribbon cutting, it's a great way to get out in the community, meet new businesses. And that's going to be midday from 2 to 2:30, so it'd be a great way to try a new lunch spot out. So that's what's going on in the chamber right now. If you have any questions about that, you can email us at Cheryl@RedondoChamber.org or Nancy@RedondoChamber.org or give us a call at 310-376-6911. And on the more fun visitor side of things, this weekend is a really big weekend. Of course, we have farmers market in Redondo Beach both Thursday and Friday. Then Friday is the ongoing Ruby's Classic Car Show. It starts at 4 p.m. right outside of Ruby's. And then Saturday morning at 8:30, the Seaside Lagoon opens for the summer. So get ready for that. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend, so at 1 p.m. on Monday, there's a tribute at Veterans Park, which we've been talking a lot about because sometimes this part, the actual memorial part of Memorial Day gets overlooked by all the fun stuff that's going on. So if you come down, check out Seaside Lagoon, come in Saturday, Sunday, then Monday, stick around, go over to Veterans Park. It's an easy walk, and take part in the Memorial Day celebration events. Also, speaking about Memorial Day, the 4th of July tickets are on sale now for the Redondo Beach 4th of July event, which takes place on July 4th. It is a very busy event, so if you're looking to come, make sure you get your tickets in advance and make sure you arrive in advance, but the tickets are on sale now. I think they might have sold out last year, so you might want to act fast. You can find out more about that on visitredondo.com or redondofireworks.com. And that's what's going on in Redondo Beach this weekend.
Okay.
You know something, Bobby? I feel the same way. I always don't feel right saying Happy Memorial Day.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's a solemn occasion. It's a solemn occasion. But it's a three-day weekend.
Right.
So what's not to love,
so
right?
It's like a party. It's like a party, but there's like it's like a party, but like this with like a shadow.
It's a sad party. It's a sad party.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of clowns got together and threw like a party.
Yeah.
It's a party, but clowns are throwing it. Yeah, maybe that's the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that was the worst phrasing I could put ever. But you guys did that.
Well, and also I don't know if I didn't hear you. I don't know if you mentioned the Memorial Day event at Veterans Park. They're having a barbecue afterwards, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
after
a $5 donation. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And veterans and active service members free.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, that is correct.
It's always a big event. It's a good event.
Yeah. Let me mention one more thing real quick. This might be this might be really interesting to the listeners. Right now, if you go on the Lobster Fest. The Redondo Beach Lobster Festival event page, we have a code that gets you the cheapest admission price for the Lobster Festival available this year. There's not going to be anywhere online that's going to sell a ticket for lower than this price. It's a $7 admission ticket. It's less than half the price of the ticket, and it ends on May 31st. So this is the last time I can talk about it on the air. If you want to get the lowest price admission ticket to the festival this year and spend all that extra money on the drinks, the food, the bistro, like our world famous bistro. Go to RedondoBeachLobsterFestival.com or Redondo Beach Lobster Festival on Facebook.
On Facebook, okay. I'm making a note.
Yep.
On Facebook.
All right.
To get the code.
It's actually on the event page, so you'll need to like the Lobster Fest page and then click on the event and the information you need is pinned at the top.
All right.
$7. That's a deal.
Can't beat it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. You're rewarding the people that are plugged in and really, 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 really want to go.
Wait a minute. Since we started talking about Lobster Fest, you opened a can of worms here, Bobby. Didn't they just announce the headliner for it?
They did.
The headliner at St. Rock last week? Tell us.
Yes. Oh, you want to know the headliners. All right, so we've got three big headliners this year. First off is the Pine Mountain Logs. They're a band out of San Diego. They do this really great cover set of all your favorite hits. Then we have a really unique, it's like a mashup theatrical event. It's called Beatles vs. Stones Musical Shootout. It's actually two different cover bands. One covers the Beatles and one covers the Stones, and they play back and forth the hits of both bands. So you get both sides. Pine Mountain Logs and Beatles vs. Stones, they are spread out over Friday and Saturday. And then Sunday, the big headliner is the band Ambrosia, which if you're into music in the 80s, you are well aware of who Ambrosia is. And we're really excited to have all three of these bands on board this year. We'll be announcing the rest of the bands over the next few weeks, but those are the headliners for the event this year.
All right.
That's exciting. Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome.
Well, now, Bobby, can you go through one more time how you get to those $7 ticket discount codes?
All right. If you go to the Redondo Beach Lobster Festival on Facebook, the Facebook page
right.
of the Redondo Beach Lobster Festival, at
right.
the top of that, there is a link to the event page. And the code is actually on the event page.
Oh, it's on the event page.
Yep. It says
okay.
recent post, and then it's the last post. And it says it's an offer code that you're going to need to enter on checkout. And it expires on the 31st.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Well, that's it, and that's all there is to fit to print, except for RedondoBeachWeddings.org.
Well, Paige,
any news there?
As I mentioned last week, we're starting to roll out some content with members. That's going to start. That's started already rolling out, and we've got some members involved. They're sending in pieces right now, and we've got great pictures going up and links going up today throughout the day. Of course, it's hashtag Wedding Wednesday. So follow us on Twitter and Facebook to see some of the glorious pictures. The historic Redondo Beach Library has been so generous in the photos they've shared that if you are a fan of beach weddings or if you are interested in beach weddings, you've got to see some of these photos. I mean, they're just the most gorgeous wedding photos I've ever seen in Redondo Beach. They're just so amazing. So make sure to check out Twitter and Facebook all day for Wedding Wednesday.
Okay. Fantastic. Amazing. Thank you very much, Bobby Christian from the Redondo Beach Chamber and Visitors Bureau.
Thank you.
Well, Weston, we have a few moments left, and we want to thank you so much, Weston Labar, founding partner of the California-based consulting firm Pear Strategies, for spending this hour with us and helping us navigate some of the complex issues surrounding the minimum wage. It's going to be rising. It's going to be rising slowly over time, ladies and gentlemen, so we all have time to adjust, but it does affect all. Weston, how can people get in touch with Pear Strategies?
Well, you can easily visit our website, www.pearstrategies.com. You can also get my personal contact information from the Chamber's website under the staff section as the consultant for government affairs. If you would like to reach out to us, please let me know. You can also go through, like I said, the Chamber of Commerce if you have any questions as far as how the minimum wage will impact your business. And I'm sure over the coming years, I know the Chamber is really one of the premier chambers in the state as far as making sure that their membership is informed, engaged, and active in these types of situations. And we'll make sure that there is information available for you at the Redondo Beach Chamber.
You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? We don't have just any partner. The Redondo Beach Chamber and Visitors Bureau is one of the premier chambers in the state for this kind of information and assistance from Pear Strategies.
I feel the chamber is very fortunate to have Weston here to explain all of this to us. It's a big issue. It's a complicated issue. And just listening today, I can see all sorts of cans of worms opening up, but we have Weston here to explain everything to us.
Now, Weston, I lots of questions come to mind whenever you have public policy issues like this that are in transition. For instance, do you see going forward, do you see these talks and conclaves around the minimum wage issue affecting the election?
That's a very good question. From the federal level, when you take the election, you're talking presidential, right?
I am.
You know, I think when you get to the general, you very well could see this being an issue. Obviously, my guess is that certain people would probably be against it. They have a golf course in Palos Verdes. And then whoever comes out of the other side, whether that's Hillary or Bernie, I know that both of them would like to look at a higher minimum wage. In fact, Bernie, I think, would be solidly on board with a $15 an hour minimum wage at the federal level. But obviously, I think it's a little bit different. You've got Congress to go through. The big caveat here in California, other than the fact that, we really are a leader in a lot of different environmental and social policies, as well as regulations on business, is the fact that we have the ballot initiative process. And the ballot initiative process is what forced the hand of this implementation of a $15 an hour strategy today.
Well, I'm pleased that we don't have a $15 an hour minimum wage at the federal level, because I think that would severely impact business in places like Kentucky or Missouri or Alabama, places where the cost of living is so much different that you would really force the hand of many businesses if they had to pay $15 an hour. Thankfully, that hasn't happened yet. But for California, hopefully that will be a good thing. Thank you so much, Weston LaBar, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.